Dear Heavenly Father, we just want to praise you, Lord, that we have the opportunity to be here at this conference. There have been so many encouragements. I can just speak for myself and listening to the different speakers and hearing their insights into your word. And I want to pray that during these workshop sessions that you will be with all the different speakers that are presenting their topics, that you'll be with all that are listening. And I pray, Lord, that also in this session that your spirit may be very close to us, that he may be our instructor and our guide. And I just want to pray that you will use me as your mouthpiece and that you will speak through me. And I want to thank you that you've given us a complete message, like we spoke about yesterday, that you've given us a message that pertains both to spiritual and physical, social, and what did I say? Spiritual, physical, mental, and social area. And so we want to thank that you are a caring God, that you created us, and that you have also counsels for our life. And I pray that you'll bless this session, that we may feel your presence and that we may learn new things and also that we may be inspired to apply some of these principles in our own life and serving other people. And this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. So, yesterday. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yesterday in the first session on health evangelism, for those of you that are new, we were speaking about Christ's method alone and we were looking at the connection that it is between health and evangelism. Of course, that is the title of the whole seminar, Health Evangelism. And we looked at the connection between the physical health, you could say, and the spiritual and the mental aspects and how these things are very closely connected. And so during this second session, we are going to take a look at some history in the Advent history, or how the health work was progressing and how God has been giving us a lot of light that we can apply. And that is a very effective tool to reach out with a message. And when you look at the Advent movement, we know, of course, that God gave light gradually, as he has done throughout all times. He even said to his disciples, you know, I have many things to tell you, but I cannot tell you all at once. And so it was also in the Advent history. We know that God gave increased light as they moved on. And we know that we receive special light on the law, on the Sabbath, on the sanctuary message. But like we talked about yesterday, God is the God that cares for all the different aspects of life. And so he also gave graciously light also when it came to health. When you look at the habits of the pioneers of our movement in the beginning, their health habits was not actually very good. They were studying a lot, bending over their books, but diet and exercise was not so much on their agenda. And we talked about yesterday how important it is with the health message, also in order to have a clear mind to comprehend and to understand spiritual matters. And so in 1863, on June 6, 1863, in Otsego, Michigan, Ellen White received her first vision on health reform. And many of the things that God showed her in this first vision on this specific topic of health reform was very revolutionary at her times. There were things that God showed to her that was far beyond what was the common, you know, medical understanding at that time or practices at that time. And we're going to look at some of the things that God revealed to her in this vision. And what I find very fascinating is how medical science today confirms the things that God revealed to her at that time. And I just feel very privileged to be part of a movement that God is leading in such a special way. You know, how he was giving her that light. And I mean, not just to her. I mean, even the same principles we find in the Bible. The health principles we find in the Bible. But she expanded through this vision. That was expanded and it was more specifically given to us as a people. So we'll be looking at some... Welcome, willkommen, Daniel. We'll be looking at some revolutionary, before her time, revelations. Some of the points that was pointed out in this first vision that she received on health reform. And one thing that was revealed to her was that a vegetarian diet enhances physical and mental endurance. Now, at her time, that was very revolutionary because, and I think maybe some of you have also heard the same arguments. If you say, you know, I'm a vegetarian, sometimes people look at you and they're like, you know, but meh. Exactly. It's a lot of myths that are still existing in today's society. Weak, exactly. I experienced it, like I told made this vegan cooking book, and I love going on the doors and using this as an entering wedge, like we talked about yesterday, how the health work is to be an entering wedge to reach people with the gospel. And many times then I tell, you know, about my experience and my changes in diet and how it has improved my health and, you know, what I've studied in the field of nutrition and so forth. And then they say, what? It's no meat and no milk and no egg and, you know, what do you eat then? I mean, man, how can you, you know, they don't understand. They think that you will just disappear almost, you know. So this myth is very, is still existing in our world today, that's true. But at the same time, modern science is actually destroying this myth. But of course, like many myths, they are lasting even for a long time in the minds of many people, even after science has proved differently. So this is one of the quotes where Ellen White describes what she God showed to her, and she says that individuals will have greater power of endurance if they abstain from meat than if they subsist largely upon it. And then she says again, and this is found in the book Counsels on Diet and Food, which has a lot of interesting, very interesting information when it comes to diet, especially nutrition, and its relation to health. And on page 330, she says again that it is a mistake to suppose that muscular strength depends on the use of animal food. Now, actually, when you look at modern science, even as early as in the beginning of the 1900s, there was a study that was done by Chittenden. And he was studying about the what kind of protein that you eat, and then in relation to endurance and to strength and so forth. Chittenden. And he was working with a group of athletes, and he wanted to see what kind of diet would be most beneficial for their performance. And so we had two different groups, and he was giving the one diet that was based on meat or animal protein, and the other group got a diet that was based on plant-based protein. And within just 5 months of this testing period, the ones that were subsisting on the plant-based protein, they improved by 30%. And this was in the beginning of the 1900s. So even as early as that, it was already studies that proved or that indicated, we could say, that a plant-based diet is superior when it comes to performance and when it comes to endurance and when it comes to muscular strength. We'll come back to some of the some other research also in this field. It was another study that was done in the 1960s by two researchers that was named Harding and Starr. And they were also looking at the amino acid combination, which is like the building blocks of protein. And they were looking at what kind of combination would be the best and would most closely resemble. They were looking at two standards, the World Health Organization standard, and then also the human breast milk, since that is like the formula that God has given to the human race. And they were also astonished about what they found in these studies. They were having three testing groups, one that was on meat-based diet, and then another one that was on a pure vegetarian diet, and one that was on a mixed diet of pure vegetarian plus milk and egg, you know, like animal products, dairy products. And they were actually amazed to see that the group that had the diet that had the amino acid combination that was most closely resembling the human breast milk and the standard of the World Health Organization was actually the plant-based diet, the total vegetarian plant-based diet. So you see, even when you trace the history, for many years back, in the beginning of the 1900s, in 1960 again, serious research has been done that has been proving exactly the light that was given to Ellen White as early as in 1863, that actually a pure vegetarian, total plant-based diet is the best for endurance and for muscular strength. Now, it's not only... in the vision, she was not only pointing out that a pure vegetarian diet would be beneficial to physical achievements, but also when it comes to the mental aspect. This is quite astonishing what she says here. It's just that eating much flesh will diminish intellectual activity. Students would accomplish much more in their studies if they never tasted meat. When the animal part of the human nature is strengthened by meat eating, the intellectual power diminishes proportionately. And I think that's quite revolutionary, actually, what she was sharing. And she uses this quite interesting word, proportionately. So it's in direct relationship, the diet that we subsist on, and our mental accomplishments. Is your question? No. And this is also quite interesting in connection with modern science that shows the same thing, that in meat products, you have certain chemicals that are actually harming the frontal lobe. Neil Nedley, in his book...
Harming means like reducing the
damaging harmful.
Yeah.
I understand harming, but does it mean like reducing the performance level?
It is certain chemicals, like one that is called arsenic acid, and then you have one that is called it's some different chemical substances that you find in meat, and they find it especially, they found it in sausages, in cheese, in the typical rich food. And they've seen a direct relationship between these ones and then the functioning of the frontal lobe. And if you're interested, I can give you more information on exactly the names. They are quite advanced names, so I don't remember exactly the names. But it's some interesting research that Neil Netley is sharing in his book Proof Positive, and also in the book that is called The Lost Art of Thinking. Those two books I can recommend. They are very good when it comes to showing the relationship between mental or mental health and our dietary habits. Very good sources. And here's just a few quotes from the book Proof Positive in relation to what we just saw, that Ellen White received this light in her first vision, that it would be a benefit both to our physical health and to our mental health if we would remove the meat products out of our diet. And he writes here on page 541 in Proof Positive that bicycle tests or athletes who follow a high-fat, high-protein, high-meat diet can triple their endurance by switching to a vegetarian type or high-carbohydrate diet. Triple. So we were talking about the athletes that were, you know, improving by 30%. And here again, he confirms the same thing, that by switching to a vegetarian type or diet, that the endurance is increased. Question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I like all of the quotes, in, you know, and I've read the book that you were quoting from. I just have one question, though. When we are trying to witness to people who don't have the same mindset as us,
yeah,
who are probably not even Christian, let alone Adventist, it's very hard to, you know, we must remember, in my personal experience, we must remember not to come to them as if we have the whole truth. We must be willing to listen to their point of view, because when she writes sort of these counsels, they are very much generalizations, and it does not govern every single different human body. You know, a perfect example is Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world. When they ask him, what do you eat just before you run? I eat chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
You know, and certain human bodies, they, because of the way they have been since they were babies, the way their parents have brought them up, their body actually works best with the meat. And if they would change, they would go through a horrible like, sort of transition stage. Maybe they would have better endurance with a vegetarian diet, but because they're so used to it, then they're used to having meat. And so, like, for example, and it goes the other way around as well. So, for example, I was brought up vegetarian my whole life, and I know that if I would try meat for the first time, I would be sick.
Yeah.
And it's like withdrawal symptoms. If someone stops smoking, if someone drastically stops having meat, yeah. So we just have to bear this in mind when we give counsels, I think, because when I try to witness to my family who are not, on my dad's side, who are not Adventists, and they're not really Christians either. They are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're like, don't you see all of the books and things and nutritionists who say that you need this, and you're stupid, why are you, you know? And but when I changed my approach and I said that it can help, it may help, it has shown, and I would show study instead of saying, you're wrong, it does bad for you, it's not good for you, you know, then it helps a lot to be positive rather than negative.
It's interesting what you say, that sometimes with the withdrawal symptoms that you talk about, you know, when people maybe want to switch immediately to a vegetarian diet, and then at once maybe they say, oh, but this is terrible, you know, I have all this. It's very interesting because even Ellen White writes about when she was switching, because she was a huge meat eater. She loved meat. She talks about her struggle when she was, you know, receiving these visions. And she was really struggling big time because she was used to eat a lot of meat. And then she talks about that when she was switching, because, of course, for her, she had received a special vision, so she was very motivated to change, of course. She knew it was from God. So she was changing immediately, but she said in the beginning she felt so faint, and she felt like, you know, these withdrawal symptoms, like a drug addict would feel, or, you know, one that stops smoking. But then after, then she writes again, I think it was after 5 months or something that she writes again, and she says, I've never felt so good. And I think it's important to share those things also with people, you know, that you're not just dogmatic or just saying, you know, do this, and you don't explain to them also the process. and that they also realize that just for when you speak to one that wants to stop smoking, you have to explain to him, you know, the process and how that you have to go through this certain period, and that is a cleansing period for your body and so forth and so on. So very good that you bring that up. Yeah. And of course, what we're doing now is basically just to go through some of them, the history or the Advent history, and see how this light has been, you know, shared to us as a people, you could say. And it's a huge blessing, but it's also good that we have this time to talk together about how we can actually implement that, or how we can share that with other people. This is another quote from the book Proof Positive from Dr. Neil Nedley, where he again shares some of the more modern research that basically backs up or confirms the light that Anwar received in this first vision. And he writes here how that meat contains a substance that impairs the brain activity and lacks a substance that the brain needs to function well. And here it is mentioned, one of those substances that I just mentioned. And it says that our sardonic acid found in meat impairs optimal functioning of the brain center for wisdom, judgment, and foresight, the frontal lobe. So again, that is some of the modern research that shows the relation between our diet and mental health.
Mm-hmm. Is that because it contains too much? Because isn't this one of the...
It is one of the amino acids.
Acids that you need because you cannot make them yourself?
Yeah, I was actually asking myself the same question, but it's interesting. When you read, for example, in The Way Out of Depression from Neil Nedley, when he writes about you know, diet in relation to mental health, then it's talking about how when we talk about the amino acid combination, it's like five amino acids that is found a lot of in meat, and they all diminish. Actually, they all have a negative influence upon the function of the frontal lobe. And then another amino acid that is called tryptophan, which is very needed in order to produce serotonin, and that is found largely in plant food. But these other amino acids that is largely found in meat, they actually diminish, or they decrease the ability of the brain to utilize the tryptophan in order to create the serotonin, which is important in order to have a good, you know, brain health and to have a good, bright outlook on life. Mm-hmm.
Did you say that some animal foods are not get in the way of you making tryptophan? What did you say?
Yes. You have different amino acids, and in meat products, you have certain amino acids that are in larger amounts. And these ones, they are actually counteracting the utilization of tryptophan in order to produce serotonin in the brain. And so I guess that is also why when we talk about amino acid combination in meat products compared to plant products, we're not only talking about, you know, reaching the standard of the breast milk or World Health Organization standard, but this also has a big impact upon mental health.
Well, the reason I ask is because I had some trouble sleeping, and I asked the doctor what I could do, and they said, well, you have low levels of serotonin, and you can eat things that, like give you tryptophan, so, you know.
Yeah.
The thing that the doctor recommended me was cheese.
Okay.
And I hate cheese.
What?
It's not that I do it because of red and white, but I don't even like cheese anyway.
Mm-mm.
And so I was like, oh, I can't do that. And she said, oh, but it has lots of tryptophan, so maybe it's an exception of the meat products, maybe, but I don't know. But then I kept on researching, and I found out that kiwis kiwi fruit. It can increase the serotonin. So I have like one if I can before I go to bed, and it helps me sleep.
So that's a good alternative. Yeah. And also, for example, banana. Yeah, there you have a lot of B6, which is also needed in order to produce serotonin. So you have a lot of in soybeans, rice, corn. You know, it's a lot of products that are, you know, good for the production of serotonin. Okay. Any other questions before we move on?
But this arachidon. We are taught you need it because it's this that we cannot make ourselves in this fatty acid. And here it says it impairs the brain function.
But of course, everything in moderation.
Yeah. As with iron or other substances in meat, it's just too much.
Even the essential amino acids, we need those, but in meat. Ratio between some of
just
them
the way
must be
put together.
Yeah,
Alexander.
I think maybe arachidonic acid that's a group of fatty acids. Mm-hmm. It might be that the different types, the type in the meat might be the one that impairs, and then the other ones, in, for instance, the vegetables or the fruit is beneficial.
It would be interesting to look more into that, because at least you have, for example, when you talk about saturated fats, you know the composition in, for example, coconut fat is different from the composition of saturated fats in meat products. So you have the shorter fatty acid chains in the plant saturated fats, so they don't have the same effect in the body as the meat saturated fats. So, but yeah, we could look more into that, I guess. Maybe we're tracing a little bit off.
We'll finish at 6 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm just asking because will we have like maybe 10 minutes, 20 minutes to discuss? Because I don't want to interrupt. So it's interesting to hear.
Okay, so we will give it a flow, and then we'll take some pauses. If you guys feel that you need to take some questions in between, I'm also open for that.
I'm just wondering how you plan the presentation.
Yeah, since we're a small group, we've actually had a quite open presentation. But of course, if we go too much off track, then it's not possible to come through all the material. So we can... we can move on in the presentation, and if you have some thoughts or some questions or some comments, you can write it down, and if it is something that is really pertaining to the thing that we're talking about, I'm open also that we can discuss that as we go. Good. Okay. Maybe we skip this for time's sake. Another thing that... what's revealed in this first vision, well, what it was that nuts can be used as a meat substitute. That was also revolutionary at her time. It was not, you know, today it is kind of common that we know that you know we can use nuts as a substitute. We have our nut steaks and everything. But she said the following, and it is quoted in Minister Healing, page 298. And it says that nuts and nut foods are coming largely into use to take the place of flesh meats. With nuts, there'd be combined grains, fruits, and some roots to make foods that are healthful and nourishing. Now, it's interesting that Neil Nedley writes in his book, Proof Positive, that just as many heart disease researchers were about to cross nuts off the list for healthful foods, and that was due to their high fat content. Researchers at Loma Linda University found that nuts could lower blood cholesterol and provide corresponding decrease in the risk of heart disease. So when you compare, for example, nut products, of course, nuts is also to be used in moderation. Of course, if you use too much of that, it will also create acidity in the body, and it also has a high fat content. But in many of the nuts, they have a rich content of the polyunsaturated fats and the monounsaturated fats, which have a lowering effect on the bad cholesterol, and it's increasing the good cholesterol, the HDL. And for example, they have done studies with walnuts, which has been used as medicine in order to lower the, for the brain as well, but also in order to lower the bad cholesterol. And actually what they developed was the so-called PS ratio, that is polyunsaturated fats divided on saturated fats. And if this ratio was, if it was scoring above 2 on this ratio, then it would decrease cholesterol. And that was based on the fact that saturated fat has actually even higher ability to increase cholesterol than dietary cholesterol itself. But polyunsaturated fats have an ability to decrease cholesterol. Now, saturated fats, they have a double as high ability to increase as polyunsaturated fats has to increase, and that is why they made this ratio. And so we see that, that the Lord gave this light, that nuts could be a part of this replacement for meat, and they contain fats that are beneficial to or the health of the blood vessels, for example, in comparison to meat that has the opposite effect because of the high content of saturated fat.
Mm-hmm. One really sad thing you see on those food pyramids, you know, is they say, you need like a bit of fat in your diet. But the sad thing is that they obviously, scientists know the truth, but to the public, they don't publish the truth, because on the pictures, they show that you, to get the fat, you should eat donuts and cheese and pies and so. So we know that good fat comes from, you know, olives, avocados, nuts, of good fat. But obviously, the public don't like to see that. They like to see, oh, okay, I can't eat the donuts then. The doctor said I can't. It's sad.
Exactly.
In the top of the pyramid,
yes.
Dessert?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
it's kind of what you allow to eat if you have to.
Exactly.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. Yeah.
But I think they don't make it, they know, they don't make these pyramids after how it should be.
Yeah.
They try to take a middle road from what's happening and what they know people do.
Exactly.
Because they cannot.
Exactly.
It isn't, it, otherwise it would be totally unrepresentative for the population.
And that's interesting. When you look at the recommendations, for example, the Nordic recommendations, they have up to 35-40% fat or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible. But it's exactly what you say. I mean, they don't dare to put it so low as is optimal because the average is higher, so they, you know.
There's another problem, and especially for the U.S., and that is that the companies that sell school lunches, they put in a lot of fat and salt and things like that, so that you continue eating it. And they know if they cannot, and so they are actually somehow influencing this dietary recommendation. Because if they are not, they cannot sell a school lunch.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot of money and power behind it, of course, and the connections and.
Artificially make many more people sick, or you would artificially make a much bigger part of the population look as if they eat unhealthy. It is the case, but
it gives a better picture than what is reality. Yeah, it makes people feel good. That's true. It's also interesting, I can mention that just before we go on, that, Awad also writes that certain nuts are better than other nuts. And then she mentions, for example, that almonds are preferable to peanuts. And it's just interesting, you know, how she received all this light back in the 1800s. And they had no knowledge about, you know, all the specifics and the composition and so on. But for example, the almonds, they score above 2 on the PS ratio. And the peanuts, they score like 0 point something, you know. So the composition of fats in almonds is much better for the heart health and in general. And it's just interesting, you know, those small details of light that God gave to us.
The interesting part about that quote, she also mentions that while eating bread with the peanuts, actually get the same nutritional value as you would when eating almonds. Mm-hmm. And looking at the amino acid composition of these two parts, the bread in it by itself and the peanuts, and combining these two, you get actually the same value as you would when just eating an almond.
Mm.
So knowing this, it's fantastic to see how she was inspired.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about peanuts and women? Because I've read studies that women should not particularly eat so much peanuts because it has it helps to produce the male hormone testosterone.
Okay.
And so it's like it makes the same thing with the pumpkin seeds. It has much zinc.
Zinc.
And it's good for men. So women should not be having so much. I've read some stuff about that. I don't know how important it is, but.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in my old university in Brazil, we would make jokes because whenever they would serve peanuts, all of the women would give their ones to the men to make them more nice.
Okay. So, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I would like to more look more into it. I can't prove it, you know. That's interesting.
Well,
that with the zinc, I know, but with the testosterone, I don't have any, you know, information on that at this moment. Interesting thought. Mm-hmm. Another thing that was revealed to Elwart was that certain combinations would be injurious to health. And especially some of the things that she pointed out was the combination of milk and sugar and egg. And we know, of course, even today that in many cakes, I mean, what are the combinations that you usually have? It's like milk and sugar and egg and white flour and baking powder or something, you know. It's like the standard in almost all cakes. And it was at her time as well. And so it was like revolutionary to say that. But of course, what we know today with the modern research is that exactly this combination, it has a lot of oxidized cholesterol, which is very harmful to the blood vessels. And especially like what is topping the list when you look at oxidized cholesterol, that is exactly combinations, and especially like, you know, the custard mixes and the dry pancake, you know, the things that contains egg and milk and sugar, and also that has been exposed to oxygen, for example, dried milk and dried egg and, you know, even products.
So they give to babies and dry milk.
Exactly. And it was actually interesting. It was one story that I heard in connection with this combination of egg and milk and sugar. It causes a fermentation in your stomach. And so it was this one guy, and he had, what do you call this in English? A skrumplever, shrink liver or something? That you usually get when you consume a lot of alcohol. And he went to his doctor, and the doctor was asking him, of course, do you drink? Because usually they would see the relation between drinking alcohol and then this shrink liver. Yeah. And so, and he said, no, I don't drink alcohol at all. And the doctor was trying to continue with his consultation to find out the reason. And then it turned out that every evening he loved ice cream. So every evening he would eat almost like a whole liter or like a big chunk of ice cream. And exactly that combination had a similar effect to alcohol in contributing to this shrink liver.
She says in diet and health and food, I think she says, I know it's paraphrased, but she said the combination of refined sugar and animal fats is as injurious as the harmful effects of smoking and drinking.
Hmm.
She actually said that. And obviously, what is animal fat and refined sugar?
And actually, even she says also that eating lots of sugar can be even worse than eating meat. And I think this is something especially to us as Adventists. You know, sometimes we're like, oh no, I'm not drinking, not smoking, I'm a vegetarian. And then you come to the lunches, you know, or the potlucks, and it's like all these cakes with lots of sugar. You know, so sometimes we can be very narrow-minded and just look at one point. But it is, we have to get the full picture and look at the total health.
It's so easy because...
Yeah.
Because you've been brought up with all the things that you don't do.
Yeah.
So you don't have to actively do anything.
Yeah.
Just going back one slide.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned there ripened cheese, mm-hmm. which is, I'm very happy that you mentioned it, because mm-hmm. Until maybe a half a year ago, I discarded all types of cheeses and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched a documentary, if you know about Keepers of the Flame.
Mm-hmm.
And a white cheese granddaughter talked about how Anna White and her family ate cottage cheese, which is actually fresh cheese.
Mm-mm.
So we have to make a difference also between the types of animal products also. And this, of course, when we talk, especially with people who are, I mean, new to this type of lifestyle, that not all of a sudden I say, oh, leave this out, leave this out. Gradually moving from one thing to another. So, yeah,
Mm-mm.
when it comes to ripened cheese, it's bad, but we shouldn't discard, let's say, cottage cheese.
Yeah, I think it's important now to keep them, how to say that, to... yeah, to be to differentiate, you know, that you don't put everything in the same camp, you know. And of course, there are things that are good, better, and best, and there are things that are bad, worse, and worst. And it's important also to keep that distinction definitely. And it's true that, I mean, it's a big difference between ripened cheese and the soft cheese for the stomach and for the digestion. That's for sure. A bit of.
But it's the Bugelst.
The yellow cheese and bread.
Yeah.
So there's also a lot longer than
that. And then you course doing some sort.
And I saw a bit better. Like, Kiosk best.
Yeah. It's definitely better. That's true. Even though, of course, another aspect that you could look at is milk in general. You know, we could share a lot of information on that. I don't know how much time we have to share about that, but it's one documentary that I could recommend that is really good and showing a lot of research in the field of exactly that, and that is a documentary that is called Forks Over Knives. It's not a Christian documentary, it's a secular documentary, but it's very good. It's good research. It's actually the most extensive research that has been done on nutrition in modern times. Maybe you heard about the China study? Yeah. So, and there, basically, to just say it very short, this Dr. Campbell that has written the China study and that also, is a part of the story in The Forks Over Knives, he was doing experiments with casein, which is a milk protein, and then in contrast to plant protein, and in relation to, for example, cancer. And he said basically through his studies that with the type of protein that he was using, that he could, you know, turn cancer on and off in the rats and mice that he was studying with. So it's quite interesting to see, you know, that the different sources of a protein can make such a big difference. And in that instance, he was actually experimenting with casein, which is the milk protein. So, of course, there are other things also to take into consideration when it comes to cheese, but, yeah.
It's good for us to keep in mind this, who have the possibility to choose, let's say, if I have soy milk here on the show, or regular milk. But just, we have to understand that not every patient or not every person that we meet has the economic possibility to choose. So this Ellen White actually asks us not to force, you know, so of course gradually, sooner and sooner, and she said that these products will become more and more available to
Exactly, yeah.
So we have to, you know, it's a very tricky role. It's not just a straight message, do this and this and this and this. You have to be very diplomatic when discussing with people.
And you have to, you know, make them understand and be reasonable in your way of reasoning with people as well, for sure. Okay, but at the same time, I would say that, you know, when you talk about these things, when you meet people like on the street, how to say it, actually many people are very interested in these things. And for example, milk allergies is a lot of it. So many people are very open to it. Actually, sometimes people outside are more open to these things than even people in the church. You know what I mean? Sometimes we can think, oh, this is extreme. But people outside, they're just like, oh, how fascinating. You know, like, for example, this documentary, Forks Over Knives, it's a secular documentary, but they are coming with so good documentation that people are just like, yeah, sure, makes sense.
Yeah.
In my church, we had a health seminar on Tuesdays, and we showed Fox overnight because we really liked it, and it was unbelievable that we had churches 400 people, and only 2 people came. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But guess how many people from outside of the church came? It was like over 50.
See? Yeah.
And they kept on coming, and then because of that, they were coming on the next seminar, which was about prophecy and other things. Some left, but some continued coming.
And praise
the church
God.
Didn't come because, oh, I've heard that before, they're so extreme.
Yeah.
But the people outside the church, they
think. Yeah. Yeah. It's true, and this is the same experience that I have in my work as well. The people from outside, they are really ripe, you know, they're really ready to hear these things. And that is truly exactly what we talked about yesterday, this entering wedge, you know, like the right arm to open the door for the gospel.
I think the big thing is to show them what they can do instead. Because even if it's something they love or they like, cheese and things like that, if you can show them what you can do instead with healthy ingredients, then they taste it and they like it, then they're ready to do it.
So yeah.
Even though we have to be progressive, we also have to show them what they can do instead.
Yeah.
And that will convince them.
Definitely. We talked about yesterday Health Expo. And I can just backing up what you're saying there. When we do the Health Expo, you know, they're going through the different stands and they are getting their cholesterol measured and everything. And then they come to the nutrition stand. And since I have interest in that field, I've been on the nutrition stand. And then people are just so open. They're like, you know, I have these high cholesterol levels. What can I do? And the way is just totally prepared. And then you can show them, for example. I mean, then you make them taste a vegan cheese, for example, and they're just like, what? You mean this is based on just nuts? You know, they don't even believe you because they think it's so tasty. And it's like, it says, you know, taste and see that the Lord is good. People need to taste that there is an alternative. And, people are enthusiastic about it. Okay. So we talked about this combination of milk and egg and sugar and the cheese and the oxidized cholesterol. This is from Proof Positive again. And it says here that oxidized cholesterol produces measurable damage to blood vessels lining cells and dramatically increases heart disease risk. Ripened cheese and dried custard mixes, typically containing sugar, milk, and egg, are some of the worst offenders. So this is what we were referring to. It's interesting. In the first vision also that Elmwood received in 1863, tobacco was actually a hot topic in that vision. And even as late as in the 1950s, the Health Organization said that the benefits of tobacco outweighs its damages, or something to that effect. It said that the American Medical Association said regarding tobacco that the benefits outweighs its harm.
Well, so we laugh now, though, but no one knew in those times. So you would just believe the scientists, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we laugh because we have the knowledge.
Yes, exactly. So it was revolutionary when she said those things, you know, back in 1863. I mean, they even recommended it as for asthma, you know, as an asthma medicine kind of thing, you know. So it was like revolutionary when she came with the insights that she received from the Lord in vision. And she would say things like that tobacco is a slow, insidious, but most malignant poison, and that it chains the will and holds the victim in slavery or habits difficult to overcome.
Sorry. Concerning tobacco, it's very interesting to read the first part of the quote, where she, if you know the mechanism of nicotine, how it works on the body, she describes it word by word, actually, how it first stimulates and then paralyzes.
That's right.
So it's pretty amazing to, you know, she described it on a molecular level, and this is something that we know just 20 years ago. So it's pretty amazing.
That's true. Very good point.
Something very short. It's so funny. I just talked with one of my colleagues, and we were doing a computer program in class, and showing how different substances were affecting the cells in the stomach to produce acid for the stomach. And then it showed how coffee makes the stomach produce more acid. They, without me saying anything, started talking about the exact thing that we have, and now we're looking back on people and laughing at that they didn't know how harmful smoking is.
Yeah.
And she said, wouldn't it be funny? That people in 50 or 30 years look back on us and laugh at us because, oh, imagine they were.
Your classmates. That's so cool.
Did you ask her if she would continue?
Drinking coffee. She really thought that maybe that wasn't so good. And I of course, picked up the thread and said, yeah.
It's working. People are open to it.
Yeah.
Because they stop drinking coffee for one day. They figure that the body is not functioning the way it functions before. So it makes them think like, huh?
Yeah.
Is it maybe addictive?
Yeah, that's true. And you know, we'll come to that actually in another slide. It's okay.
Nicotine is more addictive than heroin.
Yeah.
So when it comes to holding them in sleep.
Exactly. There it is. Yeah. Actually, it says here that intravenous, like straight into the blood, nicotine gave scores 5 to 10 times higher than even intravenous cocaine. So it's extremely addictive. And I know this also with working with people. Like, I have a good friend, she was on drugs for almost 40 years, 35 years or so. And the hardest thing for her, now she's totally free, praise God. But it was such a struggle. It was such a, walk with her. But she's a living miracle. But anyways, the hardest thing for her was the smoking. The drugs was okay, and the alcohol she could cut out, but smoking was really changing her will. And actually, it had to happen a miracle. And it was so amazing. God just took it away like that on a prayer session during a camp meeting, because she was not able to give it up. And she was just struggling. And her will was so crushed through using drugs and alcohol and nicotine for so long time. And in His mercy, God just took it away in one day. Just immediately like that. So, yeah, it's addictive, as we talked about, very addictive. And now we know, I mean, even on the smoking packages, it says it straight out, smoking kills. So it's not even a secret that we need to find a lot of research on. But worldwide, smoking claims over 3 million lives each year. And also the mental ability is affected. Smokers are less able to perform complex tasks than non-smokers. This is also from Proof Positive, page 539.
I was working in construction this year, you know, like buildings, demolition and things. And it was so funny because my boss, he fired two Portuguese and one Polish man during the time I was working there. And they were smokers, all three of them. And it wasn't because they could do less work than us, because they were weaker. They were the strongest one. But it was because every 20 minutes, they stopped working to smoke.
Yeah.
As well, of course, we know that the lung capacity would be less.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. It's incredible how fast time goes. Do you know the time is actually up already? We're just like 1/3 into it. Okay, we'll just say, how many of you are in the first eating row? Number one. Okay, shall we rush through a few things, and those that want to go, they can go.
Huh?
Yeah. Okay, so we talked about coffee and tea as well. That was also one of the things that was emphasized in this first vision that Ellen White received. And she saw that they were stimulants and that they were negatively affecting mental health.
Just because, are we allowed to get the power from apples?
Of course. Yeah. You are. Sure. Of course. She says here, just one of the quotes, coffee is a hurtful indulgence. It temporarily excites the mind, but the after effect is exhaustion. Prostration paralyzes all the mental, moral, and physical powers. And it's quite interesting when you know what coffee is actually doing in the body with the neurotransmitters and how it is affecting them. Actually, it's speeding up the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. And it's diminishing the neurotransmitter adenosine. And we could compare that to the brake and the gas in the car. So it's basically pushing the gas and it's like weakening or incapacitating the brake. And Joachim, you remember in Kenya? Maybe you were not there that time. We had a car that had a brake that was not working, and it can be quite disastrous. So it's the same in our body. When imbalance is caused in our system, then it can have quite disastrous results.
The accident? Hmm? Is that the accident?
Yeah, I think of another time. We also had a story the time you were with us. But anyways, just the illustration, you know, that when imbalance is caused in the system with the nerves, then, of course, and it's exactly what she says, you know. Of course, temporarily, you feel that you have more energy, and that's why people also drink coffee. They're like, you know, it gives them energy, but you're basically just, the body is signalizing naturally that you need rest, and then you're just pushing on. And in the long run, you have to pay the consequences. You have to pay for that. Any other question or comment?
No one drinks one cup of coffee. You know, people start with one in the morning, and then, especially in Sweden, they have thicker breaks.
Mm.
You know,
it's the same in Norway too. We're so big coffee drinkers.
It's a great conversation starter because they know that they need another coffee because they are going, like, it's like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they are willing to consider that maybe it's not that they need the coffee, but that they need the coffee because they have the coffee, because they're going up and down.
Yeah.
Studies have shown that actually an apple contains more sustainable energy than a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Because a cup of coffee gives you a burst and then goes away.
Mm.
But the apple gives you energy but doesn't take away energy. But the problem is that apples are not addictive, but a coffee
is. Yeah. And it's not a stimulant. I mean, coffee is a stimulant, and that is why you feel this energy, because your nervous system is stimulated. But Ellen White has this very interesting quote, and she says that avoid all food and drinks that have a tendency to excite the nerves. And then she says excitement will be followed by depression. And it was a study that was done in Tromsø in North Norway, with 143 participants. So it was an extensive study. It was actually a heart study by Dr. Bjelke. And in this study, one of the things that they looked at was also coffee consumption, because in Norway it's also a huge thing. I mean, people drink so much coffee. It's like you invite people for coffee, you know, that kind of thing. And they saw, especially in women, that in those that were heavy coffee drinkers, they had more cases of depression, they had more cases of insomnia, of course, sleeping difficulties, no wonder, and more cases of difficulties coping with stressful events in those that were drinking a lot of coffee.
So did you say pushing the gas and the brake at the same time?
No, you're weakening the brake and you're pushing the gas. So basically you are making, I mean, if you think in a car, if the brake is not working, I mean, in a sense you could say, oh, isn't that good that you can push the gas, it goes faster. But it can be quite disastrous if the brake is not working. And the body has a natural braking system. When it's too much, the body tells, this is too much. But then the coffee is basically just weakening those signals. And then you are pushing your body more than, I mean, and then of course in the long run you have to pay the consequences. Yeah.
I don't want to make some comments about how, like, eating meat foods and also other things that excite the nerves. She made a comment saying that those things, they stimulate, paraphrasing, so kind of these words, she said, it stimulates your nerves and therefore excites your primal instincts, thinking you have more animalistic urges.
Yeah,
she says
that's true
that,
too.
You will have a more sex drive. But whenever I have said something like that to people, they always criticize me for being so extreme and that she was crazy and that was not inspired. And I was wondering, do you know of any medical evidences for that? Because it would be interesting.
It's interesting in connection with meat. When you think about that, it contains hormones.
The hormones, yes.
And when you, and it's especially in connection with meat eating that she's making the comparison, and she says that the more animalistic, how does she say it, faculties or something will be, you know, strengthened by meat eating, and it makes a lot of sense because in meat you have the hormones, and also when it comes to temper, I mean your, you know, that you get more easily like, you know, heated up, how to say it, irritated, you know, which also has a relation. Think of those animals that are brought to be slaughtered. Of course, adrenaline is, you know, speeded up in them before that happens. And these hormones, they are found in the flesh and in the blood. And then you eat that. And of course, that becomes a part of you. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And anyone else that has some good research on that? Yeah.
No, I'm just thinking that probably several things, both the hormones, but also just the fact that when you eat, generally when you eat animal products, the quality of your blood becomes worse, and then your brain function will be slower, and then you cannot exercise the will as good as you can when you eat healthy. So that's the strengthening the animal propensities. That means that your tendency to follow the animal propensities are much stronger. So here's that, but that's not a single aspect. There's probably many aspects of it.
It's interesting in connection with the frontal lobe when you think about how research shows that things like meat and coffee and tea and, you know, alcohol is affecting the frontal lobe. And that is the organ that God has placed, like the king, that is to be ruling the lower centers, you know, the lower centers, like, you know, feeling and smelling and tasting and all those centers, they are to be subjects to the king. But then how that when you subsist a lot of animal food and are using the stimulants, it's basically strengthening the lower centers compared to the higher center that is supposed to be the ruling center and where you have the willpower. So,
Concerning the meat products, in of every steroid hormone, cholesterol is the building block, it's the foundation of it. So, of course, if you have a higher cholesterol intake, the sex hormones will be produced more. So, I mean, this is quite far-fetched, but it will take time, but this would be the final effect of it.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. I don't know if we should go through all these ones because we don't have time for that. But another thing that was also very strongly emphasized in this first vision was the connection between diet and lifestyle and mental and spiritual health. So it's not just about the physical health. We've been talking about, you know, how it is affecting the physical health and also mental so far, but that it really affects also your spiritual health. And, of course, we have talked slightly about this already.
But that's the purpose of it all. I mean, if I get people to subsist on a better diet, I know that they will be more responsive, you know, physiologically to the truth. You know, they will be more clear-minded, they will understand it better. I mean, yeah, you can't speak to someone who's drunk. Never. And even small changes, I mean, compared to someone who's drunk and someone who's sober. I mean, even a change from going to a vegetarian, from a meat eating diet to a vegetarian diet, would be easier for them to accept the truth.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that is our aim. I mean, if I managed to get, let's say, someone to stop eating meat, it would almost be as preaching a sermon, because we see this.
It's true. And we talked about that yesterday also, how... I mean, of course, statistically, it shows that Adventists are living longer, but actually it's not mainly about living 5 years longer on this planet.
No.
You know, health is not mainly about that. It's about the quality of life, and not at least that we have, that we can comprehend, for us as Christians, that we can comprehend the things of God better. And we know that this is the case with others, just like you say, you know. So, of course, we want to share it, because we want them to be able to have a clear mind to get it, you know, to be saved, yeah.
I was going to say, in Councils to the Church, she has a chapter about Sabbath, if I'm not mistaken, Sabbath meal, and she makes amazing advice, which I love so much, and she was describing exactly the situation that I find in England. She says, for some reason, the Adventist Church has found that it is a good thing to make the Sabbath meal the most expensive, luxurious meal, but I have received light that actually should be the most simplest meal. And then she explains why. Because if you eat simple food on Sabbath, after the meal, what happens in most places is that people, do you think anyone wants to do a Bible study, or to pray, or to talk about God? No. Everyone wants to just lie on the sofa and sleep, or to talk about or something that doesn't involve the brain.
So true.
She says, and of course, when you are so full, especially in Adventist places, the first thing that comes after you are so full, is ice cream and cake, always, in Adventist places, especially in England. I don't know about here, but in England it's like that. It's so sad. And she goes on to say that if you eat a simple food, then your brain, the word that she uses is spiritually discerning.
Exactly.
So that you will be open to spiritual message instead of just wanting to sleep because you can't. You know, all the blood goes to your
spirit. Of course.
So, when I read that,
No, that's a very interesting point. And, you know, I think it's important that we also think like that, because, like I said, we have been very active in the temperance work and all those things, and sometimes we can bribe ourselves and say, you know, that, sure, you know, I'm a temperance work and all those things, but temperance is not just avoiding alcohol and drugs. Temperance is avoiding all things that are harmful and using moderately the things that are good. And I think many times we lose out on exactly that concept of what temperance is all about. It's not just about no alcohol, no smoking. It's temperance in all things. It's temperance in work, in study, in you know, the food that we eat, everything. We need to take that into consideration. And I want to read this one. This is from this first vision, and for those of you that want to read the content of that first vision, it is found in this Spiritual Gifts, the fourth volume of that one, and it's a whole sequence there. It's very interesting. But here she says that those who indulge a perverted appetite due to the injury of health and intellect, they cannot appreciate the value of spiritual things, exactly like you said. Their sensibilities are blunted, and sin does not appear very sinful, and truth is not regarded of greater value than earthly treasure. So it really shows the relation between exactly diet and spirituality. This is another one. It's also good. All are required to do what they can to preserve healthy bodies and sound minds. If they will gratify a gross appetite and by so doing blunt their sensibilities and becloud their perceptive faculties so that they cannot appreciate the exalted character of God or delight in the study of His Word, they may be assured that God will not accept their unworthy offering as sooner than that of Cain. It's a lame offering, you know, just like you say, you know, if you stuck your stomach and then you're going to have a Bible study. It's a lame offering because you don't have a mind to be able to comprehend the things of God. I mean, it's. Daniel has used this expression sometimes, you know. It's the same like if, when you have worship in the evening, sometimes we'll run into the thing of having that too late and you're just so tired and it says, that's a lame offering. And it's, but it, we can give lame offerings. You know, in the Old Testament it talks about how that the offering should be, you know, blameless without spot or wrinkle or whatever. And but we can also give lame sacrifices today. How long do you guys want to go?
I know I get the pass.
Okay. So we have more things to share, but maybe we should just close off with a prayer and then we just continue in next session. And that is actually not tomorrow, I think, but it is on Monday, the last session. And then we have actually a 90-minute session, so then we have some more time.
Is it going to be continuing or something?
I will maybe continue to finish up this one, but the third presentation is basically about the basic principles of medical missionary work, like some of the basics. What is the difference between, you know, using nature's way compared to the traditional way? So some of the basics going through that. Yeah. Okay, so maybe we can close with a prayer together. And I just have to say it has been so interesting. Because you guys have just been sharing a lot of interesting, you know, inputs that have given me a lot of things to think about. So, thank you guys.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.